I would like to speak this evening on the inner highway toward God realization. These are tremendous readings that we have here tonight. Mother has said that all the scriptures are the description of the movement of our consciousness from the human to the divine. In the beginning, on our spiritual path, we conceive of a goal, divine consciousness. Now, in the beginning, we may base that upon some experience that we have, or we may base it on some intuitive apprehension of the truth, or perhaps it hangs on an idea that we come to believe is truly the greatest and highest aspect of our own being that we can achieve. Whatever the case, we do not start out with the full realization. Rather, we start out from exactly where we are at. Now, this may seem like an obvious statement, but so oftentimes in reading about the lives of these saints and these different ones who have gone through these experiences, move their consciousness from the human to the divine, we get some distorted image of what their lives must have been like. We come to believe that they were superhuman in some aspects, that perhaps they experienced temptation, but not in the same way that we experience temptation, or that they had difficulties, but certainly not in the way that we have difficulties. We conceive of them as having a highway that is paved with gold, that is, something that offers little or no resistance in their upward journey from the human to the divine. Now, oftentimes, masters may tell their own stories, including only the highest truths as they perceive it, in order to inspire us to reach out beyond ourselves. But as Mother Krishnabai talked about, it is also important to also include the human struggles that occur and the human things that it may appear to be faults within those saints, within those realized beings. For those of us who are privileged to live in close proximity with Mother, we experience both the human and the divine. There could be no doubt that Mother represented the highest aspect of divine consciousness. To be in her presence was to feel the power and the wisdom and the bliss of God emanating from her. Now, this isn't to say that it was always blissful to be in her presence. Many were the times that because of the great emanation of spiritual consciousness that came from her, that disciples went away, sometimes with headaches, sometimes feeling fatigued, sometimes finding great psychological or emotional difficulty. Because that realized saint stirs the deepest things within us, and this means psychologically and emotionally also. So it brings up both the very highest and the very best, but it also stirs up the deepest and the darkest aspects of our own being. This is the job of the realized one, of the saint, of the sage, of that one who has come to lift us out of the darkness and into the light. Because they very well know that that stuff of humanity, our habits, our thought patterns, our emotional makeup, all the things that we consider as faults and frailties, are very much part of our consciousness. And that to leave those aside, to leave those behind, would not be within the range of probability. That it is the rare one who gets a very quick and automatic kind of realization. Now, it is often said that one gets this because they have achieved it in a previous lifetime. Because we don't get it in the same way that perhaps we've read about, we may get discouraged. We may feel like we are failing. And when we encounter things such as lust or greed, wrath, rage, pettiness, whatever it is that comes up in our own minds, we think we must somehow have fallen off the path. But the truth is that you are on the battlefield, even as Arjuna was on the battlefield with Krishna in the battle of Kurukshetra. Here you have the forces of good and the opposing forces all lined up. You could imagine it perhaps as the spine. And on each side of the spine is the positive and the negative forces. Now, Arjuna is that upward force. It is that force that is fighting for light, for fighting for what is good. It is that Christ or that Krishna seed that is making its way up through the spine. Krishna, or the Christ of the East, is that pure consciousness that comes through the third eye point, that comes as a steady aspect of wisdom. You see, in the beginning, when we start out on the spiritual path, we have perhaps here and there some intuitive insights into what truth is. Perhaps it is just a vague feeling or a knowingness that we have. And this is the John the Baptist. It is the one who has come to prepare the way for the Christ self to come in. And so that intuition says, prepare the way for the Christ. The time of the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And so we begin to get this idea of what is possible within our own consciousness. We begin to conceive of, in greater depth and greater detail, of who and what we are truly made up of. But the reality has not dawned on us as a full-time thing at that point. It comes in spurts and sputs as it comes along. And along with that, we dive down deep into our own humanity. We feel as if we're in a quagmire. And we get those moments of being lifted up, and we feel, oh, at last I have reached some state of upliftment. And if this could only but last. And then suddenly, the next thing we find, our mind and our consciousness is slam dunked down into worldly consciousness and all the things that go with it, all the desires, all the pettiness, everything. And if anything, it's worse than ever, because the power of this consciousness that's coming in increases the life force and the life energy. And so it animates everything, good and bad tendencies, to even a greater degree. So sometimes it feels like things are getting worse before they begin to get better. And so this must be understood on the spiritual path. Otherwise, we think very badly of ourselves. We must understand that this battle that ensues is all part of the spiritual path. And it is really something. It is a terrific battle. And so this upward force of Arjuna comes up through the spine, and this Christ consciousness is speaking to it. Now, when the John the Baptist is ready to pass it on to the Christ Center, the John the Baptist is located at the solar plexus. The Christ Center is located at the third eye point, or the Ajna Center. It's sometimes said that the solar plexus are the moon, and the Christ Center is the sun. In whatever the case, this Christ consciousness begins to speak to us. Now, the difference is that we get it in more full measure. We don't just get uplifted for a period of time through insight or through revelation, and then we come back down into human consciousness. Because when we get those short insights, I would observe in my own self that when that happened, I would have such clarity of mind that I thought, well, this is obvious. This is so obvious. And then as that experience began to recede, it almost felt like as if waking up and having the clarity of a dream. And as you wake up more and more, that clarity begins to fade away. And it's just you want to reach out and grab it, but you can't do it, and it fades away. In the same way, the original energy and consciousness of that vision comes to you so clearly, but then it begins to recede away. And as it does so, you can feel your mind begin to come in and fill in the blanks. This is done by the human ego. And because of that, it makes something imperfect of which something that was given to you was perfect. And then when we try to put it into words, it goes through even a greater distortion, because words are terrifically inadequate in order to explain exactly what we have gotten through that inner revelation. But with this Christ consciousness comes a more steady stream of consciousness. It's not so much of a going in and coming out, but rather it is a steady stream. Now, this is not to say that it's there all the time. It's not. But it has that quality to it, where we can stay in that for minutes, hours, days, weeks, sometimes months. But then, as long as we stay in the dual consciousness, we still move in it and out of it. And so that Christ consciousness, it's a steady pipeline from divine consciousness into your own. And you feel yourself connected with this terrifically powerful life force from God consciousness. And it works through your body. Now, this is a gradual transformation that happens. The body at first is inadequate to expressing that total divine consciousness. And so you have to work up to it. And this consciousness comes in and it works through your spine and it works through your brain and sometimes through all different parts of your body. Sometimes your body heats up. Sometimes you go through physical motions that resemble yoga asanas. Sometimes it's just a writhing on the floor. Sometimes it's a dancing. Sometimes it's a singing and making different noises. The singing and the different noises are all harmonizing through vibration to these different centers within the spine. And all the movements are towards opening up these centers. And so it takes on a very physical aspect. Now, I think particularly in the West that this is appropriate, because we are so focused on the material that as we get these things coming through our body, we begin to get convinced to the very core of our being, down to the very cells of our being, that these experiences are real, that they're valid, that as they happen over and over again, it convinces the mind on a very deep level. It is often true in the beginning that we will have spiritual experiences. And as soon as we come down from them, the mind will doubt. It will say, well, was that a real experience or was that a hallucination? Was that maybe perhaps some psychosis or some hallucination or some dream that I was having? And so on and so on. And so it doubts these experiences. And that is because at first it doesn't come through in its fullest manifestation. It has not yet become the Christ, but rather it is that John the Baptist experience. But as we grow in those experiences, as we keep our mind focused on God alone, then we are lifted up into higher consciousness. And through that, we get insights to greater and greater degrees and with less and less distortion. Until at last, there can be this steady flow that flows through the consciousness and through your actions, out through your mouth, in any way in particular it wants to express itself. And it carries with it the vibration and the power of God. And through that, it has the capacity not only to change your own being, your own body, your own consciousness, but those who are around you. And so you become a great blessing and a beneficiary for all those who come within your purview. This is a great thing that you can offer the world, and yet not you. But it is that highest consciousness within you. For the you that has traditionally orchestrated things, made things come to happen, is no longer functioning in the same way. But rather it has surrendered itself to this higher consciousness. And in doing so, it gives away its managerial duties. And this higher consciousness takes over. Now, in order to do this, you must come into complete humility. And by this, I mean you recognize that this power, this consciousness, this intelligence is the thing that is going to operate through you. And if it decides to do something that maybe is embarrassing, something that makes you show in a poor light, or any of the rest of it, you don't resist it. You don't fight against it, but you surrender yourself to it. Because your allegiance is to that Christ consciousness more than to any other thing within you or outside of you. Not only that, but as you enter into the purity of this consciousness, you feel yourself cleansed of that shame, which operates as a result of separation. And you are free to operate on any level. And sometimes you may come across as a complete idiot. You may not have even the consciousness to form a complete thought or a complete sentence. Just as difficult as it was once to stop your thoughts, you may find it just as difficult even to have a thought. And sometimes you may even question yourself as to whether this is the right thing or not. But if in trust you surrender yourself to that highest consciousness, you don't worry about it. You let that go. And you move into this higher realm of being. And this is your Christ consciousness, or your Krishna consciousness, or your Buddha consciousness that is spoken about by all the saints and sages around this world. Excuse me. And so this is the greatest thing that you can do. This is the greatest thing you can do for yourself. It is the greatest thing you can do for your fellow humanity. And it is the greatest thing that you can do for the world at large. And you must trust in this, because along the way, it may guide you and direct you to do some things that may disappoint some people in your life. And this cannot stop you from moving on. But rather, if you check this out, down and through your whole being as your inner direction, as the direction that you should follow, then you have to trust that it's going to be for the highest good of everybody concerned. And I can tell you that these inner directions can blow to dust all the things that you have held in the world as being sacred, all the things that you have cherished, all the things that you swore you would never do, suddenly you find yourself doing. And so there can be no holding back from it, because that is only the human ego. That is only the human self. And it cannot judge what is for the highest good of everyone concerned. As I've mentioned before, I think that the chaos theory has much to teach us here. It is said that through mathematical experiments that they have traced that weather patterns in North America can be traced to a butterfly flapping its wings in the continent of Africa. And because of the set of experiences that sets off, that a flock of birds gets stimulated from that, and so on and so forth, that energy, that vibration, that impact spreads throughout the world and can affect weather patterns in North America. Originally, computers were developed to anticipate weather patterns. Well, we can see how well from our own current day weathermen and women, how well they are predicting the weather. Often they are wrong, and often a day or even hours before they predict it. It's that complex. It's that intricately tied to so many different factors. And so it is with human behavior. And through our own human intelligence, there is no way to tell how our actions will impact those who are immediately around us, much less in a wider span than that. So through our own human faculties, we do not know what we can do that will achieve ultimate good for the greater humanity. And oftentimes, what we attempt to do that is good in a human sense backfires on us and has unintended consequences. And because of that, we create a bigger mess than what we started with. So we have to give up on the notion that the human ego, that the human mind, has the answers for us. Now, it can be very good at solving some problems, but when it comes to solving this spiritual problem, it is not only not useful, but it becomes antithetical to what it is that we're trying to accomplish. So we have to get into stilling this mind. Now, how can this be done? It seems like every time we try to stop it, it only goes more crazy. It only gets more activated. Anytime we try to become still, suddenly our mind jumps from here to there to the next thing, and we find ourselves even more focused on the outside world than before. It's like trying to go on a diet, and the next thing you know, you're eating more food than when you before had attempted not to go on a diet. So the thing is this, is when we focus our mind on any particular thing, that thing takes precedence over everything else. If through, let's take our example of trying to lose weight, we focus our mind on not eating food, well, in order to think of what we're not going to do, we need to think of that thing. So we put in our mind food. Well, the subconscious does not recognize a negative, a not. All it does is it pictures food. And so what we're doing is we're reinforcing the idea of food rather than letting go of the idea. If we want to get someplace, we need to stop that thought pattern. One way to do it is when we find our minds wandering in a particular way, put a big black X in front of it. Just X it out. And then divert the mind. Create a positive mental image of what you want to be. Let's say you're dealing with a low self-esteem. You don't think that you're worth much. And so you think, well, what I need is more self-esteem. And in the process, if all you're thinking about is all the ways that you're inadequate, that you don't measure up, then you're only going to reinforce that, and your actions are going to result in that, result from that, rather. So what we need to do is to form a positive picture of ourselves as being supremely confident, as walking into a room perhaps full of strangers and feeling with us our full sense of oneness, a sense of confidence, a sense that our own inner light is shining out from us. Now, it doesn't have to do anything in terms of impact of other people. It's how we feel about ourselves in that moment. And so before we go anywhere, before we do anything, we proceed ourselves. And we do that by mentally thinking of ourselves in that situation. And as we do so, we form a positive image, a positive picture of ourselves. And if we hang on to that, and any time something negative comes up, we put that big X in front of it, and then we divert our mind, then we give power to that new positive image, and we become more of that. So this is the way that we begin to change our consciousness, but it doesn't happen in a day. These deep subconscious impulses can be stimulated by various triggers at various times. And so they come up time after time after time, and sometimes we think we haven't gotten anywhere. But all we're doing is we're digging down through the layers. And as we do so, we begin to gradually purify the mind. And we begin to form a better image of ourselves. We think differently about ourselves. We see ourselves filled with the light and the power and the presence of God. And we begin to actually act that out. And at one point, we'll stop, we'll look around ourselves, and we'll think, you know what? I've been acting just that way. I've been thinking just that way. I've been feeling just that way. And isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful? And so you just reinforce that further for yourself. So you hang on with everything you have. You don't let go of that idea, but rather you stay focused on it. And this is an incredible truth. This is the way that we can change this consciousness. Now, by keeping our mind and our intelligence focused on this, on God, on the highest truths within us, you see what we're doing? We're gradually programming ourselves to be filled with that light, to be filled with that intelligence, to be filled with that power, to be filled with that magnetism, to be filled with that one single pointed purpose and goal in our lives. And as we do that, we become that. You no longer think about it. You no longer get it from something outside of you, but you become that light. In the beginning, you perhaps go and see a realized soul. And because of that, you can see the light of God within them. And that's a great thing. But the next step is that you begin to reflect that light within your own life. And then the third stage is that you begin to actively manifest that light through your own consciousness. And when you do that, and you do it in a constant way, you become one with that. And in becoming one with that, you become fully yourself, fully human. But as I was speaking earlier, as Arjuna meets Krishna on the battlefield, Arjuna looks across, and you see this is his final mile. This happens at the sixth chakra. It is the Son of Man. But it's the Son of Man that in its most pure sense. It is as the Son of Man as Jesus Christ, or Jesus representing the human, Christ representing the universal. Arjuna is in the same stage. Arjuna, which is the human, the perfect devotee, the perfect disciple, is in the same carriage with Krishna, who is the Christ consciousness. He is being pulled and driven by these beautiful white horses. And so this carriage is the body. And these forces are the upward propelling forces within our own consciousness. And this battle of Kurukshetra happens right within the sixth center. And when Arjuna looks across, he sees those that he has known all of his life. He sees those human aspects that he considers good and noble, his teachers, those things that have helped him along the way. And he loses heart. He says, how can I slay those human characteristics that I have so well regarded in my life, that have helped me to get to where I am? How can I do it? And yet, going beyond the human is what must happen in order to go into the universal consciousness. So this is also representing when the aspirant gets to this place, it must go beyond the image and the form of the guru and into the universal aspect of the guru, which is God consciousness. Because you see, the guru has gone on before and has arrived in that place of God consciousness. And because of that, they have come to represent and symbolize that. But they are a symbol only within the mind and within the consciousness. You must go beyond that symbol and into the reality. And that you will worship the same consciousness that they have come to worship and realize within their own being. So Arjuna loses heart. And he throws down his weapons. And he thinks, I cannot fight today. There's nothing I can do. I will yield the day. And so this tremendous Christ or Krishna consciousness comes forward. And it begins to explain the noble truths about its own being. And explains that that which is true, that which is of the spiritual, has always been and will never cease to be. And that which is false, that which can be killed, was never true and has never truly existed. So there can in truth be no real loss. Nothing that is real can be destroyed. This body can be destroyed, but this body is like a pair of garments for the soul, like a heavy overcoat. And when the soul is done with it, it casts it off. Now that does not mean that those who are left behind do not grieve for that one. But the truth is that that one continues to exist and exists far beyond the grave and can be known. That mind, that consciousness can touch that one. And I have proved that in my own life. Because the consciousness that did manifest in the body of my teacher, my guru, continues to touch me, continues to inform me, continues to teach me. And from that standpoint, there is no break. Now, somebody may say this is a matter of hallucination or this is a matter of delusion. But I know the truth of it because I am the one who experiences it. So in truth, there is no death. Nothing that is real can be destroyed. So there is nothing to fear. Whatever it is that needs to be destroyed is only the delusive idea of separation from the human, from the divine. And this is true of you and of me and of all of us. And so then Arjuna takes heart and gets up, and Krishna says, the battle is already won, you just need to fight it. And so this is true for you and I also. The battle is already won, and you are not alone. You as a human self, you as a human identity, cannot do this battle. Because the ego cannot slay the ego. But what you can do is you can surrender yourself. You can dedicate yourself towards expression of the divine consciousness within you, towards seeking it out within your own consciousness and making it your reality. And if you do this, then you will know the joy and the bliss, the love, the purity, the power of that consciousness in such great measure that you will no longer recognize yourself as yourself, but as a new being. A new body born in Christ. It's not a body of the physical. It's a spiritual body. And you become animated once again. And you see the light of God shining within and everywhere about. And you feel yourself connected with universal consciousness. And it's not that you become the all, but rather you become one with it. And through that, you continue to grow, you continue to learn, you continue to manifest that light in everything that you do. And then ultimately, you come to that last place that needs to be overcome. And then when that happens, it is said that you go over the top. And at that point, you cannot be tempted back. And that this is the ultimate evolutionary course for one and all. But it takes strong souls. It takes individuals who are dedicated towards this proposition. And so I do not go out after anyone because I think to myself, this is a terrifically difficult path. Why would I invite somebody on it who's lukewarm about it? This is something that requires dedication of heart, mind, and soul. And for others who want to go just a little ways and no further and otherwise have that, they may have that, and there are plenty of other places for them to go. But for here, for now, for us, for those of us who are seeking it in this way, this is the place to come to go that final mile. And we can do it together. And we can form an alliance that is not dependent upon one another, but rather it joins the light of each other. And we can feel that upliftment that comes when two or more are joined in that purpose. And time and space do not interfere. We have brother and sister disciples in Canada, in other parts of this country, in other parts of the world. It's very interesting when Swami Satchidananda wrote a letter and said, as I read your letter, I feel you standing right in front of me. And this is the way that I feel with him also. And so that presence, that beautiful, wondrous presence that he is. Now he is a totally unassuming individual. And he is totally selfless in the way that he carries out his work. And yet he is a tremendous light in God. You know, it's not always easy to witness or to even see the light of God within another person. Sometimes it takes unusual forms. And so we don't always see it. We don't always know it. But when your heart is attuned, you can feel it. And sometimes those ones act as our opposing force, because that's the way that God arranges it. And when that happens, they are doing us a great favor, a very great favor, even though it may not feel like it at the moment. And so every step along the way, we are taken care of. We find fulfillment, if we would but see it. Take everything that comes to you as for your own highest good. And you will be amazed at how that transforms what are sometimes called negative experiences into something that helps propel you higher. When you hold the attitude of bitterness, of resentment, of feeling down about things, of feeling negative about yourself or about your life, you are at that moment programming yourself for what is to come. So if you don't like your circumstances, then change your attitude about it. Because attitude very definitely determines altitude. And so if you don't like your altitude, if you're flying too low, maybe you're flying underneath the ground, and it's no fun, and you want to blame everyone and everything else, but you've got but one person to look to, and that's yourself. And so change your attitude. Begin not to think that life is drudgery. Don't see it as something that is purely negative, but rather see it as the fun of things. See it as a manifestation of God. And that if things that are painful that come your way, perhaps physically painful, see that as, you know, the dogs nipping at your heels just to keep you moving along the spiritual path. Focus your mind on God in even a greater manner. And so every experience that comes to you is a reminder of that. And if you utilize it in this way, you will make very rapid progress towards divine consciousness. And when you do, then you will know the truth of what it is that I say. That your essence, your being, is made up of love, of light, of bliss, of intelligence and wisdom. Now, as we read from these masters, this doesn't mean that life is always easy. Life is oftentimes a struggle. And so we shouldn't just look for, well, if I'm feeling some pain or something, I must be off track. I can tell you for myself that oftentimes being in the presence of my guru was oftentimes a painful experience. And oftentimes when I experienced upliftment and bliss, I felt physical pain along with it. And for many years, I thought there's no separation between bliss and pain. It all came together as a package. I can tell you, I didn't like it very much. But I tolerated it. And we got along all right. And eventually we made friends with each other. And I'm not a glutton for pain. I don't like it. But I developed some tolerance for it. And that's all right, too. Now when I get pain, I just think, well, that's how God is coming to me. This is for my highest good. This is helping to uplift the world, whatever the occasion may be. And so I don't fight it. And you know what? A great thing is that so much around physical pain is the anticipation of it or the fear of it. It magnifies it many, many times. Think of a situation where you're out and you're doing some kind of physical labor, or perhaps you're in a desperate situation and you're having to struggle with everything, all the strength in you in order to accomplish that. And maybe you're a bit battered and bruised and you're scared and you're afraid and the adrenaline is flowing and it's a thoroughly unpleasant and terrifying situation. But the physical exertion that you put forward. And then think about being in the gym and putting forth the exertion there. And you may experience many of the same physical sensations of pain, of making the muscles burn and all the rest of it. But that's good pain, right? We call that good pain. The other is bad pain. But when we think of it as good pain, we don't mind it so much. And we get up the next morning and we're sore and we're creaky after working out. But we think, oh, that's good pain. That means I had a good workout yesterday. And we can even smile when we have that kind of pain. So you see how important it is how we think about things and what attitude that we take. And if you take the correct attitude and put everything first as God and for your own highest good, then you will know yourself to be filled with that light towards that upliftment and that fulfillment. And you will eventually come to that place where you will know in heart, mind, body, and soul. Thou and I are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. And there will not be a shadow, a question of a doubt in any part of your being, because you will know it through and through, and it will not be a fleeting thing, a one-time thing, but it will come and it will visit and it will stay. I want to read something that was sent to me by Meher Baba. Bondage adds to value of freedom. All persons have to pass through the state of bondage, but this period of bondage is not to be looked upon as a meaningless episode in the evolution of life. One has to experience being caged if one is to appreciate freedom. If in the entire span of its life, a fish has not come out of the water even once, it has no chance of appreciating the value of water. From its birth till its death, it has lived only in water, and it is not in a position to understand what water really means to its being. But if it is taken out of water, even for a moment, it longs for water and becomes qualified by that experience to appreciate the importance of water. In the same way, if life were constantly free and manifested no bondage, man would miss the real significance of freedom. To experience spiritual bondage and no intense desire to be free from it are both a preparation for the fulfillment of the freedom that is to come. Path begins with a longing for deeper reality. As the fish that is taken out of the water longs to go back in the water, the aspirant who has perceived the goal longs to be united with God. In fact, the longing to go back to the source is present in each being from the very time that it is separated from the source by the veil of ignorance. But the being is unconscious of the longing till it, as an aspirant, enters the spiritual path. One can, in a sense, become accustomed to ignorance, just as a person in a train may get accustomed to the darkness of a tunnel when the train has been passing through it for some time. Even then, there is a definite discomfort and a vague and undefinable sense of restlessness owing to that feeling something is missing. This something is apprehended from the very beginning as being of tremendous significance. In the stages of dense ignorance, this something is often inadvertently identified with the variegated things of the mundane world. When one's experience of this world is sufficient mature, however, the repeated disillusionments in life set one on the right track to discovering what is missing. From that moment, the individual seeks a reality that is deeper than changing forms. This moment might aptly be described as the first initiation of the aspirant. From the moment of initiation into the path, the longing to unite with the source from which he has been separated becomes articulate and intense. Just as the person in the tunnel longs for the light all the more intensely after he sees a streak of light coming from the other end, the person who has had a glimpse of the goal longs to hasten toward it with all the speed he can command. So from out of the words of these great Godmen and great Godwomen come the truth of our own divine nature. For those who wish to suffice on fairy tales and things of the past and historical deeds, let them do so. But let us become spiritual heroes in this fight for our own inner freedom. Let us learn to identify the true inner goal, the pathway and the highway of the spine and the brain, and make it one that leads us towards our own infinite freedom, our own universal consciousness, and our own divine love made manifest within ourselves and everywhere about us.